To the Buddha, the Dharma, and the highest assembly, I beg of refuge until I'm enlightened. Thus, listening to teachings and so forth, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all transmigrators.
And the idea was preparate so people understood what Jenang was.
Yeah.
Jenang, the Drokan, that's Josh, the Dandrawa, Kandra Dandrawa, Jenang, Karyan, that's a Hakoa.
Yeah. Hey, that's the Yella. Kandra was Shela.
Yeah.
I let the Jela that Jenang that you put this this year.
So first we will talk about refuge, and then we'll talk a little about taking empowerment, because we have a visit for, in Tibetan, what is called Jenang, which is because we have a visiting teacher coming who will get Jenang. Okay, so first, in terms of Buddhist refuge, I'm going to talk about the benefits. And Pam, can you hear?
Not quite.
Okay. If we move forward, would it move forward?
Or should I maybe turn? Get another table. Seems to be a table. I'll just take it up a bit.
Okay, so while there are many benefits to refuge, one of the first one is that it acts as the basis for all the other vows that you may take. So whether they are vows of individual liberation, like householder vows, or novice ordination vows, whether they are bodhicitta vows or tantric vows, all of those are taken with the basis of refuge, and without that basis of refuge, it says there isn't the necessary support for the other vow, for taking those vows. Was that better? No, we've lost her.
When we moved her, maybe.
That's right, we have this trouble in Auckland as well. We kind of find people and then all of a sudden Skype disappears.
Are you just Skype in Auckland?
Yeah, we're Skyping in Auckland if people want to listen to teachers.
Hello, Buddha Dharma here.
We've just kind of got it more settled.
I'll put you on the speaker again and we'll see what happens. We just shifted the phone.
Wednesday nights at 7:30
just
and
a moment.
Sundays at 4.
Oh, cool.
Okay, all right. You there, Pam?
Yes, if you could speak up a little bit, it would be great.
Okay, so Geshe-la just explained the first benefit of refuge being that it allows one to take other vows, whether that's individual liberation, like householder or novice ordination vows, bodhicitta vows and tantric vows are all established on the basis of one's refuge.
Well, that was
good. Is that good?
Yes, that's good, thank you.
Okay, then second characteristic is having refuge makes a difference to one's purification of negativities and obscurations.
Okay.
And then a further important benefit is it makes a difference to one's accumulation of negative karma. Yeah, it makes a difference to, in terms of not accumulating further negative karma. Okay, so then the another benefit is the swift attainment of Buddhahood, and what that means, how that is explained, is that, if, for example, in this lifetime one takes refuge, and then by practicing you place imprints on the mind. So then in future lives, through those imprints, you kind of keep on practicing and building on that, and so in that way it brings about the swift attainment of Buddhahood.
If you disappear, Pam, just ring me back.
Okay. So those are the most
important benefits.
Okay, so to talk about the objects of refuge, as we generally speak of the triple gem, so the jewel of the Buddha, the jewel of the Dharma, the jewel of the Sangha. So the jewel of the Buddha being the founding refuge, the refuge of the founder, the jewel of the Dharma being the actual refuge, and the jewel of the Sangha, the spiritual community, being those who assist one in one's refuge. Okay, so that in terms of ourselves, we have the different kind of difficulties and sufferings associated with body and mind. We have the sufferings of birth, sickness, aging and death, and then you have the general difficulties and sufferings of cyclic existence. So in terms of being liberated from those, it's not like there is someone who can swiftly bless one and all of a sudden one quickly attains liberation, one is placed, you know, in the state of Buddhahood. But through practicing the path, we come to attain Buddhahood. Through practicing the path, we come to attain liberation. And so the Buddha shows that path, shows the path to liberation, shows the path to Buddhahood. And in that way is the founding refuge.
The
Buddha as the founder was formerly like us within cyclic existence, undergoing the sufferings of birth, sickness, aging and death, and then at a certain point began to engage in practice, and through that practice came to attain Buddhahood, and then showed the path that he himself had practiced in order to gain that attainment. And so likewise, we are also able to accomplish that path. And then, so just going over these objects of refuge in a general way. So this is the founding refuge, and then the actual refuge being the Dharma, because it is the Dharma that actually protects. And so what the Dharma refers to is the truth of cessation and the truth of the path. So the truth of cessation is the actual abandonment of afflictive emotion, being free of afflictive emotion, separated from afflictive emotion. And then the truth of the path being the method, the path that leads to that attainment, and that path being, for example, being the wisdom that realizes emptiness. Okay. So when we give rise to the truth of the path and truth of cessation in our own continuum, then we are actually liberated from suffering. And you could say it's like the illustration of when you take the illness, the medicine cures the illness. Okay, and then the spiritual community, the Sangha, who assist ones in one's refuge, who act as who help one, who are role models, and so these are the Arya Sangha. Those are those who have generated the truth of the path and the truth of cessation in their own continuum. And so you have the Aryas who are hearers, the Mahayana Aryas, and so forth. So when we say Arya, or sometimes they translate as noble, means one who has attained the path of seeing, the third of the five paths. So then I want to talk about how one asserts or explains a Buddha. And if in general we talk about four bodies, but first we're going to take the two, being the wisdom truth body and the form body of the Buddha. Okay, so if we use Shakyamuni Buddha, who came to India, as the Buddha as the illustration, you have the form of Shakyamuni Buddha, and when you talk about the form body, you have what they call enjoyment body and emanation body. So in this case, the form of Shakyamuni Buddha is the emanation body.
Mm-hmm. lungu sanje shaje tabak ye tu shi gi lungu di omile omi omi tu bu bu sta de lungu jar ta lungu di tere ngam de che sen sam bu sun che sanje da peje sam bu ke che ke bata di maran tu tu jala ngam tu ta da ma tu nang tu mare wa ne lam pa pa ta yon pa pa she ma pa lam tu de pa pa na ne ta da te sing pa pa ma tu je tu ye ba je tu ye ge ka ye ma wa
Okay, so that Shakyamuni Buddha appears, and so that we are able to, in a form that we are able to see, and accomplishes actions in accordance with the aspirations and characteristics of sentient beings, and for, as the Buddha fulfilled the 12 deeds, and so that's the physical form being then the emanation body. You were to say, well, what about the enjoyment aspect of Shakyamuni Buddha? That would be the enjoyment body aspect, would be present in the highest Ogman, the land which is below none. And that form has the 32 major and 80 minor signs. And for us, it's not something that appears to us. And it is only we talked about the Aryas before, it is only the Arya, Mahayana Aryas who have reached the path of seeing, who see that enjoyment body, So in terms of where that enjoyment body abides, there is the teaching of the Dharma and what those beings there are able to directly see that form. But that's a form that is seen by those who are Arya beings, that those of us who have not yet entered the path, who have not yet gained the realization, don't have the merit required to see such a form. Okay, so in the beginning we talked about the truth body and the form body. So the form body has that two aspects of enjoyment and emanation, and it is through the form body kind of manifests the activities. So those two form bodies are the result of the practice at the time of the path, when, for example, the Buddha has not yet attained Buddhahood. A Buddha has not yet attained Buddhahood and is training in the path and meditating on bodhicitta, on love, compassion, and making prayers to accomplish the benefit of beings, then those, the results of that are the form bodies that can directly accomplish the benefit of beings. So they're like a result arising from the method aspect of the path. Are you good? Can you hear?
Yes, I can, thank you.
Okay. Okay, so then we have the wisdom truth body. So the wisdom truth body has two aspects of the nature truth body and the exalted wisdom body. Okay, so using the illustration of Shakyamuni Buddha, the from the, in terms of the physical emanation of Shakyamuni, his knowledge, his wisdom knowledge, the mind of Shakyamuni Buddha, is the all-knowing mind, which is the exalted wisdom truth body. Okay, so it's the qualities, well, not the Buddha's mind, really.
That the Namkinsa Nala Tamil, Namkinsa Takanya, Shepa Chigita, Dembanyika Chichato, Topeta, Lushire Tiyarvata, Dembanyika.
So when we say all-knowing mind, it is a mind that is able to cognize in one instant both truth, conventional and ultimate truth.
That the Namsha Shita, Jetavishi Nimuchipare, Namba Shadayore,
And for the Buddha, the meditative equipoise and post-meditation are exactly of one nature, that the Buddha, while abiding in meditative equipoise, also perceives conventional truths, conventional phenomena. For example, even the high bodhisattvas, when they are in meditation on a one-pointed meditation on emptiness, will not perceive conventional phenomena. And so, for example, we have the Heart Sutra that says there is no form, no no sound, no taste, and so forth. And it's what that's talking about is that for those who have not yet attained Buddhahood, when they are in a meditative equipoise focused on emptiness, then they will not perceive those conventional phenomena. They will not appear to their mind. So that even for the Arya Bodhisattvas, they will enter meditative equipoise, and then they arise from their session, and they have accomplished their subsequent wisdom, which is out of meditative equipoise. Then they would go back into meditation, and kind of then have subsequent wisdom. So it's a changing from one to the other. Whereas for the Buddha, the meditative equipoise and post session is of one nature. Okay, so this, when we speak of the all-knowing mind of the Buddha, that in terms of ourselves as those who have not yet attained Buddhahood, we have a consciousness. And it is this consciousness which will transform into the all-knowing mind. Okay, so the fact that it can transform, this consciousness of ours is able to transform, to move to being the all-knowing mind, is because of the characteristic that we talked about yesterday, that our consciousness is obscured by afflictive emotions such as attachment, anger, and so forth. But these are not in the nature of the mind. They are temporary, adventitious obscuring factors. Yes.
So then you really say that it's not really transforming because it's already there.
Well, but if you don't do the that's where you get, this is the tricky of English.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't do it, it doesn't happen. It's not like it's already there and it doesn't matter. So you have to have some word that indicates there will be a change.
It's like you realise your true nature or something like that.
Yeah.
We realised, oh, I'm being pedantic about words, but...
Well, it's tricky because you use realisation for other things and it's not actually the same word in Tibetan.
Yeah.
That's tricky.
That's okay.
That's the
best
tricky.
We could do.
Going into the natural sangyarum, you know, and you transform the same guru and anjan, you know, the ranjan, you know, the musum topan anjan, you know, and you have those. That it is suitable, it is able to become a Buddha. So, I mean, potential. Because it still needs the causing conditions, like a seed needs water and heat and fertilizer in order to grow. So for that potential to manifest, it still needs the conditions, but there is a potential. The potential is always there. Maybe that's a better way to say it.
Yeah, I guess I'm just stuck on it, just already. I've been stuck on it for a while now. I've already been there, you know, without... And then removing obscurations.
Yeah.
You know, so not having to add anything to what is already... If your nature is your nature...
Transforming doesn't mean adding, though.
It could be letting go.
Yeah, well, it's actually a good question, if I can translate it, because we do... Not add, but we don't have like bodhicitta and all the skills. So there's something that we realise the nature, but we develop more. The geshla karin sina, the nikongi samba de ngazo, semgi ranjin toma meba ne yu, toma meba ne sangyerung, the driba mewa so, yinen sem rang ngog yurgimai. Yinan, near the Nansu, Toman Evanil, Sangyarum, Yinan, Nansu, Janju Sim, Senalamundus, Nansu, Tobdan, Kimbadan Sewa, Semgi Ranjan Yun, Yasu, Nansu, Semgi Ranjan, the Yunatan, Nansu, Tanda Tobdan, Kimbadan. Sewa ganga drugurwa.
Oti drugurwa.
Te nyamlenche na drugurwa.
Te nyamlenche ni kirwa. Ena yunga du tatilo. Sidan nyamlenche ni yungurwa.
So the same yurgamari yinan de drugurwa yus sigurwa te drugin anakarzi.
Same yus na ta. Same yurma. Same ta ko. Same Korata, same day, which same Korana called Nibajo, called the Tongorbat.
Yeah, so we have to, the mind has that potential that we need to see, which is your point. It's like seeing it instead of being obscured. But at the same time, through the practice, we have that potential that we don't see.
Yeah.
But we haven't got. Or limitless compassion, wisdom and power of the Buddhas, and that comes through the practice that we do in order to see the mind. So there is, you find there are kind of different many different explanations relating to this, that there are those explanations that say that when one sees the nature of the mind, then everything that obscures it will be eliminated. Okay. Right, so in terms of this nature of the mind, yesterday we talked about, I don't think I used this term, but the naturally abiding lineage of the mind, that and the different Buddhist schools will explain it slightly differently, like the mind only describe it as a potential that can become the potential to generate an uncontaminated exalted wisdom, which is another way of saying this all-knowing mind.
I was going to say, I've sort of heard it in the form of, like, we have a vessel that's, like, you know, full of dirt, that we need to remove those dirts, and then it becomes clear.
Yeah.
And then you're cultivating those seeds of compassion and development potential for the Buddhahood. Because if you do it in amongst everything, your wisdom will be tainted by delusions and things like that. So the potential in mind is that pure potential, but it needs to remove its
obscurity. So if you have like a glass vessel, so to speak, that was dirty, and you clean that, so then the clarity allows you to practice the other things. So there is also kind of along with that approach, the approach where you are purifying and generating bodhicitta and compassion and love. So you're working on both the purification and the method aspect together. So when you have completely eliminated the obscuration such that it is pure, then at that time, that is like the establishment of the actual all-knowing mind, because you have eliminated all that obscures it. So that when you're talking about what obscurations we are clearing away, you have the obscurations of afflictive emotion and obscurations to knowing. The obscurations to afflictive emotion are all the things like anger, attachment, jealousy, pride, and so forth. Anger, pride, and jealousy. And the obscurations to knowing are the imprints of those minds. And the imprints of those are what stop us seeing the nature of phenomena. And so before we referred back to being able to see the two truths in one instant, it is the obscurations that stop, prevent the mind from seeing the two truths in one instant together. Okay. So we were talking about the two types of the wisdom truth body, and the other one being the nature truth body. And so that nature truth body is the truth of cessation, of abandoning the obscurations. Alright, so when we talk about this nature truth body, there are two aspects. There is the aspect that has abandoned the obscurations of afflictive emotion and the obscurations to knowing. If we give the illustration of that, it is simply the lack of true existence of the all-knowing mind. So this illustration of the lack of inherent existence of the all-knowing mind as being the nature truth body is the example that the Middle Way school gives. And so you have this, the lack of true existence of the all-knowing mind is the same as the lack of true existence of the minds of ordinary beings who have not yet attained Buddhahood. And the fact that for all sentient beings, the nature of their mind is lacking inherent existence, is lacking true existence, is what means that all beings can become, be attain Buddhahood. So all of us have this lack of true existence in our own continuum. So, for this reason, because for all of us our mind lacks true existence, lacks inherent existence, therefore the afflictive emotions like anger, attachment and so forth are not inherently part of the mind. Okay. So this is a topic of great kind of discussion in different Buddhist texts. In terms of sutras, you find it one in the essence of the Tathagata Sutra, and then in terms of commentary, one of the major commentaries on this Buddha nature is Uttara Tantra, which is translated in English.
Rashinam same thing, when you gom 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 to the galata, demasset to the galatima service, the pena same timber never tell a loss of your money, said which the pena and patient will tin namkala ye to the galatin service, the namkala loss, that was better.
Okay, so then this, so we have this naturally abiding lineage, this naturally abiding lack of nature. That, and that is this naturally abiding nature, which is the lack of true existence of the all-knowing mind. And so when we meditate again and again on the lack of true existence of the mind, then through that meditation you clear away the stains. But that clearing away of the stains is not different from the very lack of true existence itself. And they use an illustration that when the clouds kind of disappear into the sky, that's not different from the clarity of the sky itself.
Dinzi the chasso to the pump set a set. The same thing of maple current, you'll current tell a loss you are myself.
Okay, so when we meditate again and again on this lack of true existence of the mind and abandon the grasping at true existence and the attachment and so forth, that abandonment is not other than the lack of true existence of the mind itself. Okay, so that in terms of this nature truth body that we've been talking about, while it is one nature, it has two aspects, and that one aspect is the naturally abiding lineage, which is the lack of true existence of the mind, and the other aspect is the adventitious lineage, which arises through the abandonment of that which obscures the mind. And this is our ultimate refuge, that this, by abandoning obscurations of afflictive emotion and obscurations to knowing, we have attained our ultimate refuge. So that, because when we talk about refuge, there is like conventional and refuge and ultimate refuge. So conventional refuge refers for those who have not yet attained Buddhahood, their reliance on the path of the truth of the path, the truth of cessation, and so forth. But when those are actually attained, then you have your actual, you are attaining your ultimate or final refuge. When you realize them in your own mind. So what we've covered this under is explaining what our three objects of refuge are. And so do you have kind of a general grasp of what I mean by the four bodies of the Buddha?
Actually, what I would really appreciate is being recommended a book kind of these bits that I grasped and understood and these bits that I need to read really slowly and
again and again from.
Yeah, in Uttara Tantra there is. Also in Jeffrey Hopkins' Meditation on Emptiness, that he does talk about the four bodies of the Buddha. Meditations on Emptiness, Four Bodies of the Buddha. Jeffrey Hopkins does a small part. Then only.
If there is this text, you know,
text in English,
in English there, then if you read yourself, you know, hear yourself, and then when I come here, I explain these things, then you can know much deeper, you know,
yes.
Otherwise, if just I explain here, maybe you know roughly, but hard to understand deeply, you know. So this is the way in monastery we study like that. First, you know, they have everybody student, everybody has a text, and then they go to the our teacher, you know, and teacher explain these things, and then we go to. There we debate each other, you know, debate and discuss. We do this like this. Here you could debate or not, I don't know.
Uttara Tantra. There are translations.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they
U-T-T-A-R-A.
I don't know in the English whether it uses, it explains it, but I don't know whether it uses the four, because it's quite poetic, though, that quite as clearly those four terms.
It's liberation.
But, meditations and emptiness definitely does.
I think it does also mean liberation of the hand as well.
But it's just one part of the chapter. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to track it down.
Okay.
It's very clear.
I'm pretty sure I've seen it.
Well, Uttara Tantra is an extraordinary text, but Jeffrey Cobb Hawkins has got a short bit.
Yeah. When you say extraordinary text, you mean it's full of challenging or...
Ground, that's Kokawin and Zewo, they're near both. I don't know. There are bits of Uttara Tantra maybe that are hard to understand, other bits are very clear. But it's very beautiful. It's a very poetic, beautiful thing to read.
So, where would we find that?
Yeah, Amazon.
How do you spell it?
Uttara Tantra.
So then, to talk further about refuge, you have causal refuge and resultant refuge. So when we speak of causal refuge, those are beings who are of different, not our consciousness, they're not one's own continuum, like Shakyamuni Buddha, the realization of the truth of cessation and the truth of the path in Shakyamuni Buddha's continuum, and all the other Arya, Sangha and so forth, that by relying on them, we will eventually actually gain that attainment. So they are our causal refuge. So then resultant refuge is based on our own practice, we come to realize the truth of cessation and the truth of the path in our own minds. We become an Arya Sangha, we attain Buddhahood. And so that, therefore, that is the ultimate refuge, because you, through your practice, you have abandoned suffering. So that's your ultimate or resultant refuge. Okay, so then, so those are the objects of refuge, and then the way of taking refuge is generating reliance or refuge on the Buddha. In terms of refuge in the Dharma is our actual practice of the Dharma, and our refuge in the Sangha is following their trainings. And then in terms of the advice of refuge, the most important is abandoning harm in sentient beings and abiding in accordance with action and effect. So these are, without going into huge amounts of detail, these are all the most important aspects of refuge.
I just have a question. Please. You know when you talked about relying on Shakyamuni and the other Buddhas, what is it that we rely on? Do we rely on their words or their... What is it that we rely on?
It's all Shakyatobada. Shakyatobada Sangyajemba La Khyab Tsudrodu Nganzo Kodzogi Sungla Tengiyo
Kodzogi
So one aspect is you're relying on their words. Okay, so there are four reliances in terms of the advice that kind of an advice that was given that speaks of four reliances, that not relying on the person but the word. And Geshe-la quoted from Yes, so when it says not relying on the person, it means like not saying, well, just because it was someone is called a Buddha that one kind of relies or has faith in, or because someone's a king, you don't rely on the person in that sense, but you look at what they taught and the Dharma. So that, and Geshe-la went through the quote that's saying, when the Buddha said, don't rely on my word just because it was the Buddha that said it, analyze it and understand it, and then because you see the truth of that Dharma, then rely on it.
Okay, so we rely on the truth of the Dharma that we have discovered or something ourselves, not just something because it's in a book. It's kind of from the heart.
The Dep Chigbo Nala De Yi Che Che Wa Mare So So De Che Pa Che Na.
Yeah, so you see, not rely on person, but you rely on his word. a spirit.
Yeah.
But in terms of word, and there is a sikyang bata, and meaning and word.
Interpreter.
Huh?
Meaning and
see the tuning or what we share the see the share the layer, see the tuning, see the mother tunda la ta set.
Okay.
See Kashi the name got a penna. Oh, see now the town tunes want to be a penna. See, oh, meaning tunda shabat.
Yeah, interpreter. Okay, then in terms of the words, it's not just relying on the, what would you say?
See, cup to zero.
The, just the words themselves, but understanding the meaning. So not just what is said, but the meaning of what is said. And then in understanding the meaning, because there are also interpretive and kind of direct teachings and interpretive teachings. So there's like a direct teaching. Yeah. And then there is or obvious meaning, and then there's the interpretive meaning, and so one must understand the also understand the interpretive meaning.
What about skill?
Yeah, well, in the sense of our skill, yeah. Or
no, their skill.
Their skill.
Reliance on their skill, yeah.
And that's all sangi ge trinini sugi yuna de koran zepa kia warwa sangi tso. Zepa da trinini kia wa. That's all de la kia tengirwe.
Ah.
Hato tanda sangi ki sung la kyab ten ki kus kalab nawa yorwa. Ina de jene ki triwa sangi yun ten dan zeba kiwa yorwa.
Zeba la
de kutu.
Ije.
Hato de kyab ki yorwa.
Hale zeba e? Zeba kyab ki yu. Ta zeba kyab chile ta zeba ta kyab ki yu yorwa.
Yes, so you would also as an object of refuge, you would have the qualities of the enlightened activities of the Buddha, like that skill in their activities.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Pam, do you have a question? We lost you.
Pam.
Hello.
Oh, you are there.
Do you have a question?
Yes, I've got two things.
Pam, true or you?
The first one is, I wonder if you could just give me that phrase, I missed it, where you were explaining what conventional refuge was.
All right. The Gyukyab Yanchu. So the causal refuge are the objects of who are a different continuum from oneself, like Shakyamuni Buddha, the truth of cessation and the truth of the path in their continuum, and the other beings who have similar realizations, and by relying on them, they are our causal refuge. In relying on them, they are our causal refuge.
Is that the same as conventional refuge?
Conventional refuge. Kunzo.
Kunzo pe.
Kyab.
Kunzo pe kyab senata. Benata sanje. Tanda pape kansa tunzo ki kyuki. Kodenta lamte tunzo re. Maranzu jima ane godenda lamde to yindu gala bana san magye bana godenda lamde ta ji yorwa tanda tongpa pampe godenda lamde ta tuzu kunzu pe kyabre ina ko kyab taktu tanda taktu yo marwa.
So conventional refuge is the generation of the truth of cessation and the truth of the path in the continuum of the Aryas, and likewise for us, before we attain Buddhahood, we will generate the truth of cessation and the truth of the path in our mind, and that is a conventional refuge.
Okay, that's great, thank you. I just missed that bit.
Yep.
The other question I had was, just a second, I've got it here in my notes. I marked it with a little asterisk so that I wouldn't forget it. One moment. I just missed one of the phrases. When you were talking about the ways of taking refuge,
yep.
You talked about abandoning harm.
Yep.
And also acting in accordance with action and I missed effect. The last word.
Effect.
Action and effect.
Yep.
That's karma.
Yep.
Right, got it. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Kiam Rogi Labcha, the Nurse Pawada Moran Le Lindri, the Injitsik Jemadi Amcho Makoa.
Okay, that is a big on a fire, and I can take Kiam Rogi down the
So one aspect of practice is by reflecting on the qualities of the Buddhist, the qualities of the Sangha Yena Kunjo Sum. The Buddha, the jewel of the Buddha, and the qualities and the characteristics, and by recalling these to mind, it is a practice of cultivating refuge again and again. One of the practices is the making of offerings. And so, for example, reciting the offering verse before we eat food or drink. Okay, so that when we make offering of whatever food or drink that we are taking, then by making that offering, one can think of receiving blessings. In terms of the aspect of making prayer associated with that offering, that by making an offering of what, transforming what we eat and drink into an offering, making it as an offering, we can also link that to the prayers of thinking, may all sentient beings, oneself and all sentient beings, be inspired to generate the profound and vast paths, or may our self and sentient beings all be continuance ripen to generate bodhicitta. Or if you are linking that offering to tantric practice, that may self and all sentient beings swiftly generate the illusory body.
Mixed chopan and Lucasian Bushitat to the Chapter Manako, Shashula Chopan, Chopa Punic or Sonom Jacob Sadage.
So that when we do that practice and those prayers in that way, every day we're taking food, so that even if you are not doing an additional kind of vast offerings, by making those prayers along with the daily food you take, then automatically along with that, you're creating vast merit.
I don't quite understand how you're offering it to the Buddhas, the Dharma and the Sangha.
Mm.
And then you think maybe that you're offering it to all sentient beings that they might get the illusory body and yourself. I so that's like in addition to that?
Not offering, a prayer.
A prayer, so I don't
the, okay. Dedicating, okay.
The chuba pundu sozo dinam du mopa chewa this sa semjin tam jela nyur du
ya mopa che mata mopa che chingela to so pa malam kya ta semgi malam kya ta tesla.
So it's an offering, and then you also are making a prayer, like an aspiration, that through that offering may all sentient beings swiftly attain the illusory body, swiftly attain Buddha.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a state of mind, it's the way you're thinking about it.
Mm.
Mm. Mm.
Okay, so that along with one's offering to kind of as part of that offering to the Triple Gem, one is thinking that one offers to all the root and lineage lamas, but we can remember this kind of aspiration for all sentient beings. It's a way of thinking, so that we take, you know, we may be in restaurants and places where we're not feeling comfortable to recite an actual verse of blessing, but you can still remember this, think in this way in terms of taking food or drink. And in terms of blessing, even reciting the blessing Om Ma Hum, the words Om Ma Hum blesses the food and drink.
Okay.
Okay. So that completes what I want to cover on refuge, and then we're going to talk about Jenangs, about initiation and empowerment.
Jena called to the Tatana, Jena Kare. There's another mark. Jena is not that you are the Ramadan to the Tatana, say you are. Nag, now you take Jidan teaching in Bama, you are. The teacher, oh, Jamdo, Jamdo, that quiet, the Shubala, Jamdo, quiet, you
are.
And Tizana.
Well,
there's
Okay, so when we use the term in Tibetan, it's jenang. In English, you get initiation or empowerment. So this is a tantric, this is practice associated with tantra. So in terms of generally, in you have Mahayana Dharma, Mahayana teachings, which has the aspects of sutra and tantra. So it's Mahayana, but it's specifically tantric practice. And the basis of taking the initiation is one's refuge. And then the benefit of taking the initiation is it empowers your practice. It gives you, so for example, we have many different deities like Medzin Buddha, Jinrezik, Tara, and so forth. And by receiving the initiation associated with that practice, there is a blessing in that, and that you create a connection to that practice, And that means when you do the practice, there is a greater benefit or power to doing that practice.
So before you take the jinni or the initiation, you'd have to take refuge, is that right?
Jinnang shui munna kyamdru lingu gru.
Kyamdru lensa na ta su su kyamdru che che ye na tigo.
Yes, so taking refuge means that in your heart, in your mind, you have the thought of refuge. Doesn't mean that you formally, but in your mind, this is a, you know, you're relying,
right,
taking refuge on the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha.
And I guess it's important to kind of understand what you're taking when you decide to take refuge. So until it's really clear in a person's mind, should they not take refuge, or would that help them make clear it? Or doesn't it matter?
Before they take root?
Like, we've been learning today exactly what refuge
is. Yep.
So, is it better to understand what it is before you
take it? If you understand the qualities and characteristics of the objects of refuge first, then and on that basis take refuge. But there are also people who, having listened to the teachings, even if they haven't had an extensive explanation on refuge, who still feel confident in the teachings and in that sense also take refuge.
Okay.
Refuge is offered at every initiation?
So, in the words of the initiation itself, there are the verses or words associated with taking refuge. But another important thing is, in taking initiation, you take the bodhicitta vows. So in these tantric practices like medicine, Buddha and Jinrezig and so forth, of the four classes of tantra, this is action tantra, and so there is no taking of what is called tantric vows, but there is the taking of bodhicitta vows.
Can I ask a question? Just coming back to that matter of refuge.
Yep.
With these initiations, I'm making an assumption that if you haven't taken refuge officially yet, that you can't then partake in these other initiations. So for me, for example, as I haven't officially taken
refuge. The jenang shudu dingun la lama nyamdu mixen kamdu che gugurwes. If oneself has faith and
conviction,
yes, so you don't have to have if you have a conviction and reliance in yourself on the Triple Gem, it's not like you have to have officially taken refuge. There will be people who've officially taken refuge, but the main thing is that you have in your own heart refuge. Mm.
Okay. For me, it's like there's so much, always more to know, and yeah, it's such a long path of learning, even things we don't know that we need to learn.
Yes.
That it's like have an intuitive knowing,
mm,
so to trust that intuitive mm knowing. And recently I did take refuge,
yeah,
and I felt somewhere earlier, even maybe not even in this life, but somewhere already I have refuge.
Mm-mm.
But it's like doing the refuge brought quite a lot of things in a way together for me that I didn't know that was going to happen. So there was, I don't think magic's the right word, but there was something very powerful, even though I didn't know really, and it was a very spontaneous choice. So in a way you could say it was a light choice, but it wasn't. It was an intuitive choice.
Yeah.
In the end it was the right timing for that. And things shifted and changed that I didn't know was going to happen, I didn't expect to happen. So that's my experience. So each person comes to it with a different, from a different.
And the lam tarim or the gyachim or the ganga tamune koa kabudos. And the tamuran sinana the kyamro nyeva yu yin and the kyamro da mixel lenson. Mixel lendu simnana kibra chunson, jinlab najan chunson sigros. Then I'm on Jinlab Jungi and Hamako, you know, Jinlab Jungson.
Yeah, I think so. So potentially it's still appropriate if that feels right.
Yeah, if you, based on your, there's also Nyamlin Dembo Chess, I'm getting it, I can't think I'm. They draw a channel and then a demo check in a song in a general lens chakra.
Yeah, then it's the deal.
It's a little bit. So, yes, in that it's based on your conviction in the Mahayana teachings, that, and the associated factor is having some understanding of the path, understanding how suffering, you know, the nature of suffering, the understanding the wish to be liberated from cyclic existence, having an understanding of bodhicitta, of emptiness, so some grasp of those three main aspects of the path. And really that this is what you want to practice.
So is it kind of a commitment to Buddhism to follow the path forever and ever and ever? I mean, you'd have to be pretty sure that that's what you wanted to do before you had an initiation. Or can you just
think of this lifetime? Is that what you mean? The difference between thinking of this lifetime or
I'm thinking of this lifetime, but I'm not thinking, I'm thinking that at the moment somebody could be really committed to following the Buddha's path, the Mahayana path, and then in a couple of years they might say, oh, I've done a little bit more reading. I don't want to follow this path anymore.
So what happens then?
Yeah.
And I meet Taka and then I think, Lord, in all of this, was a nabichu, donang yu, dan lo jung shi yu, you know, jenang shu. Lord, gashi jema de, oh, jitin nga nyam na di chek, mena, Sambayona de carry chungre so so mama jenang shu so on de jema sengyo ye na carry.
That is, she done a good at Chinachi shu at the world whole flatty at the better watch lapchi top the air. Negative that was so you shall in it. This that is Madevachiro, Madevasina tasted it. And a chilago that to the chirin did the chirin.
Okay, so by taking the initiation, that person has made a connection with the deity and has received a blessing. If they give up the practice later, then yes, there's kind of a unease. There is an uneasy thing about stopping it. But on the other hand, in the long term, there is blessings because they made a determination. They did think to benefit all sentient beings. They generated, they placed all the imprints associated with the path on their mind.
So if that sort of happened, but if you didn't follow these things, and if you follow these things and later you gave up, so this thing is, which one is valuable is, you follow these things and later give up, this is more value.
To have done it.
When you involve these things and you just going just what normal things and you involve these things and later anyway were other circumstances you even gave up, but still more value this.
Being in their mind, the more chance there is for everybody to.
Yes, and from they have inference from lifetime to lifetime.
You don't lose, you know, all your learning in your life, your love, you know, the love you grow. Well, I think when people grow and learn and love, that's never lost because it becomes a part of.
There's already painted in our mind, you know. Even temporarily, there's something, other circumstances, there's something happened. But still, the print is there, maybe next life or later, you know. Many lifetimes, seeds growing up.
Okay.
You know?
Thank you.
Got one more question. About, you know, the initiations, I guess. I feel like I'm not a standard Buddhist. Like, I don't really necessarily know what one is anyway, but, but, you know, like, I've had a lot of benefit since I've come to Buddhism, and that's only been, like, in the last year or 18 months. And I've kind of seen the other side where, you know, where there is no suffering for a short period of time, and then that, you know, that went back to normal. Normal life again. So that gave me that direct understanding of what the possibilities are and what you can have or experience. But I know that I don't think I'm ever going to be someone who, you know, is going to be day in, day out, you know, meditating every day necessarily, reading every day. But at the same time, you know, all through my life I've been doing the Buddhist work and I've been, you know, trying to open my heart and be more giving and more loving and, you know, get rid of every bit of anger or annoyance or whatever. But I guess all of that, so I feel like I am, and like, and it's in my heart, and, and it's in my heart because I see the truth of it and I know, I know it from somewhere deep down. But I don't feel like I'm ever going to be a textbook Buddhist.
Yes, like Yenso. The one, the Sedina Natsuna, Nyamlin Chua, the.
Nyamlin Chua Sedima.
Well, Nyamlin Yichi Yu, the Dungal Pantogi, the Yichi Yu, Yinang, Nyamatawa, Lojong Yabuche, Gong Yabuja, they took my, the Nambichu, Kaisus. So So if you're not a textbook Buddhist, are you saying, is it all right to take the initiation? Is that what you're asking?
Because otherwise I feel like maybe I'm a fraud.
Then the lojong da, the nimatawagi gontan matuna, mora moba da, moba yuna, then it jenang shuna digadus. Mora nchi jina da zimba chena yabu marisa.
Alle this shana mara. Ta jimara tanda jimaya, kale suju ta.
Yeah. So maybe just wait. Keep doing what you're doing and listening. There will be other times to take them.
Mm-hmm. So is that kind of saying that really you have to be doing this every day? You have to be practicing every day in order for that to
be
enough.
I think it's the doubt, the feeling of not being ready. It's not the. Not the what you have to do.
It's not really not feeling. It's not about not feeling ready. It's about more feeling like I don't fit into a textbook mold.
You don't have to.
What is a textbook?
Yeah, what is a textbook? You mean practicing every day?
Someone that studies a lot.
Yeah, somebody who studies and reads a lot and practices every day, and you know, knows all of the ins and outs and fine print.
So if, for example, using it in the terms of just the listening to refuge, the explanations of the objects of refuge and so forth today, if you have that kind of sense of conviction and confidence in that, and so if associated with that, then there's a sense of conviction towards the Mahayana Dharma. So there is no specific commitment to do something every day out of the like a recitation that must be done every day. But there is the taking of the Bodhisattva vows. One has to, if one is going, then one has to have the thought to actually take those vows.
Cool. Okay.
So they're later, you know, vows we can't hold them as purely and as strong as we want, but at the time of taking, one has to have the kind of the sense, this is I want to do and I want to take
this. What's in your heart and what you believe.
When you're taking those during the taking those initiations, if you have a don't faith or something like that, then you can't get so this is the main thing. You understand?
That's good explanation.
Can I just clarify, because before I thought you said it was vows with bodhicitta, and then you said vows with bodhisattva.
Sometimes I actually prefer bodhicitta vows, but
Okay.
we do those just next time when we have the that one, the bodhicitta vows, just the chant, the prayers that we do. I just need a bit more understanding of bodhicitta vows.
Bodhicitta. Bodhicitta Dhamma. Bodhicitta Dhamma gets the death. Don't see. You have to pray. So Yesha said first there is what they call 18 root vows, but if you were to say what is the essence of the bodhicitta vows, the essence of the bodhicitta vows is in order to bring about the enlightenment of all sentient beings, I determine that I wish to bring about the enlightenment of all sentient beings, and for that reason I'm going to engage in the trainings of the bodhisattva. And so it's that determination. And then also with bodhicitta vows, one can take them again and again, even if they weaken over time or you don't hold them purely over time, you can renew and restore them.
So are they like seeds?
Sapun nashanwe, dombalindu.
This kind of, see the, you know, the sang yawa.
Sang.
It's like a gold something, gold sergi chalashuna. Sergi najinshuna. And be broken, but you can make again.
Mm-hmm.
You see the gold, golden
ornaments.
Earring.
Earring.
Earring. So if you broke it, but you can make again. So this is the bodhisattva vowel is like that.
Mm-hmm.
Other vowels like you see the
vows of individual liberation, like the monks or monastic ordination.
Monastic ordination. Like a full ordained monk or nuns there. Vows. So this in this life, once you broken, you can't take this life. It is kind of, you know, muddy pot.
Yeah.
You know, muddy pot is there. Once you break, you can't get back again.
Like it's a terracotta pot broken. It's you can't restore.
Yeah, and the bodhisattva vow is if you once you take it, it makes
an immense merit, like positive potential generated through taking bodhicitta vows, because your mind is determined on the benefit of all sentient beings. So it's a very powerful thing to do.
Mm. What if you are in a state of a little bit of confusion, your mind is a bit clouded, but you have a heart that wants that at the time of the vows.
Yeah.
How does that help?
So the same same the taramu but the bo you know kapshudu jenangi kapshudu same that's miselwa you know the
kapshudu kapshudu.
No problem. No, it's not a problem.
So the shoe said the lay shoe,
yeah, because sometimes you know, you're there and you're ready to take, but you get a bit distracted or a bit sleepy. That's not a problem.
Pretty normal.
And you can just take the do it as a blessing anyway, can't you, without having to
Junlab Shua Nashin the Domba Raling Mara Junlab Dam Lusim Jan Dom Luba.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can take it as a blessing whether you receive the complete initiation. I'm not sure, but you can. Like the aspiring bodhicitta, I can't do it now, but I aspire to it in the future. And so therefore...
You see, one thing I would like to clarify, you see. So this kind of initiation, you see, action tantra, you know, the titles like medicine Buddha and long life, you know, this kind of initiation, this is lower tantra, lower tantra. And other, you know, like highest yoga tantra initiation, like Yamantaka and Kalachakra initiation. Kalachakra initiation is the highest yoga tantra, you know. So when His Holiness gave the Kalachakra initiations, how many people there, you know?
Thousands and thousands.
You know, how many people there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they get, they come in, they, so this, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You,
they not all of them able to make all the promises.
Mm.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
But they have attention.
He
said at the time, though, for people that the teachings were more important than the initiation.
Yeah.
If you so that's why if you get some bless your
blessing,
bless then that's all right. Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
Mm.
Okay. Yeah. Anything else?
Anything else, Pam?
I'm still here. I can't quite hear you.
No, anything else?
Oh, from me?
Yeah.
No, I'm fine, thank you.
Okay.
I appreciate being able to participate like this.
Okay.
Thanks, Sharon and Celia, for their clear mind on that.
Thank you.
Right.
See ya.
We'll hang up. We're going to do the dedication prayers.
All right, I'll do mine here. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.